Talk Wednesday on KSLI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Paul Wearson.
And I'm Dennis Hart. Here we are again, Paul, on this second Wednesday in October, and brother, is autumn in full swing.
Yeah, I'm wearing a jacket, no shorts. I'm slated to go to the high school football game Friday night, but the weather forecast scares me off.
We're talking about chilly, chilly weather for that game. Maybe in the low 30s, even below freezing.
Yeah, it's going to rain, could be snow flurries. It's kind of depressing to think about. But today we have a great show, right?
We have a fantastic show today, Paul. Among our guests, the new president of the Iowa State University Research Park, Rick Sanders, who, as you'll recall, used to be on the Story County Board of Supervisors.
And we'll also hear from one of the organizers of an important race that's coming up this Sunday in Ames, one that's being run for a good cause. And we'll talk about that red-haired girl known as Little Orphan Annie.
Little Orphan Annie. But joining us first today, Leanne Harder, Story County's Outreach and Special Projects Manager, who has word on what's happening around the county. Good morning, Leanne.
Good morning. I feel like I should clarify, even though Paul said he's not wearing shorts, he does have pants on.
Yes,
he does have pants on.
The police were on their way down.
That was a little awkward moment there.
No, Leanne, we don't want you to be awkward at all. No. Go ahead.
Well, thank you for having me. I want to start by reminding those of you that own an ATV, ORM, ORV, and snowmobile, which hopefully you won't be using this weekend. Your registrations for the year are coming due soon. Those are due by December 31st. Any renewals after that date incur a $5 penalty per vehicle. You need to go to the Story County Recorder's Office from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday to update your registration or give them a call at 515-382-7230. We also continue to have an immediate need on the Story County Board of Adjustment. We are accepting applications for a position that ends December 31st, 2023. So it's not a full term. It's filling a vacancy for reappointment. You can go to the website for Story County and click on the application for appointment. That's at storycountyiowa.gov/appointment app. Deadline for that is 5 p.m. Wednesday, November 6th. And you can direct any questions to Alyssa Wignall at 515-382-7204. When we're talking about boards and commissions, we also have more openings that are still continuing to be open for the Board of Adjustment in addition to this one, Planning and Zoning Commission, Asset, and the Commission on Veterans Affairs. So if you're interested in any of those, go to our website for more information and file an application to serve on those boards and commissions. We did a test of our emergency alert system last month. If you received a phone call or a text or an email, thank you for signing up, but we need more people to sign up. Right now, the landlines are only pre-programmed into that. And Story County Iowa Alerts gives residents and businesses the ability to select how you want those messages sent to you and the communities for which you get messages. So, say you work in Nevada but live in Story City and your kids go to school in Gilbert, you need to probably register for all three of those so you have notices of what's happening. Go on to storycountyiowa.gov/alert to register, and then you can sign up and make sure you get those important messages. Some news from the Treasurer's Office. They are assisting the Blue Star Mothers of Iowa, which is an organization that supports those who serve overseas this year. This fall, they're gathering donations for their holiday care packages. So if you want to bring in any of the following items, I'll list soon. Until November 1st, the Treasurer's Office will be accepting those donations. They're looking for non-perishable snacks, including beef jerky, nuts, protein bars, instant oatmeal, peanut butter, jelly, microwave popcorn, trail mix, crackers, and so forth. Those types of things that will travel well overseas and not go to waste. Toiletries, including disposable razors, aspirin, wet wipes, that's hard to say, floss, toothbrushes, toothpaste, Q-tips, mouthwash, deodorant, feminine hygiene products, foot powder, hand sanitizers. I think you get the idea of those. Some miscellaneous items that include some sporting goods, magazines, iTunes cards, phone cards, batteries, blankets, towels, DVDs, books, and twin size sheets. And, of course, monetary gifts that are submitted will be used towards covering shipping costs, a great cause to help the Blue Star Mothers of Iowa through the Story County Treasurer's Office. They will also be working with the Story County Veterans Affairs on annual supply drive for the VA home, so check our website for more information as that becomes available. And then those random black license plate the blackout plates, they still have those. If you do want to get personalized plates, you need to order those from the DOT. So you can check out online for that. And then, Paul, I'm sorry, but the first half of this year's property taxes were due on September 30th. So if you have not paid, you're subject to a penalty that's assessed 1.5% per month on delinquent payments. Notices will be going out from the treasurer's office to those delinquent property owners this week. So maybe you don't want to check your mail, or maybe you do, but they'll include the new amount with that 1.5% penalty added. Again, if you have questions, contact the Story County Treasurer's Office. The Story County Supermarket of Veterans Benefits is next month, Friday, November 15th. It'll be held from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Plex, which is on George Washington Carver Avenue, just north as you go outside of the city of Ames. Donuts and coffee all provided in the morning, haircuts all day for veterans. Various organizations will be there, everyone from Iowa Department of Veterans Affairs to the Iowa Transition Assistance Advisor, American Legion. I will be there to talk about our Home Base Iowa program and more. If you have questions, call Brett McLean at 515-956-2626. We did receive notice from the Iowa Department of Transportation of an upcoming public information meeting. This is for an interchange that is proposed to be located at the corner of 580th, which is just to the east of Interstate 35, the northwest or north-south road going just by Brecky's over there, and Highway 30. There's a proposed realignment and new interchange at the intersection. It will be displayed and discussed. Iowa DOT staff will be present to discuss the project on an informal basis. Anyone that's interested is encouraged to attend and express your views and ask questions about the proposed project. The DOT did indicate that as more information is available, it will be on their website. And if you want to make a comment, they have a website. I'm going to share it. It's bit.ly/IowaDOT2922. So slowly, bit.ly/IowaDOT2922. Now, voting has begun in the Story County Auditor's Office, actually this past Monday, for the combined city school election that will be held on Tuesday, November 5th. If you go to Administration Building over in Nevada, 900 6th Street, you'll see signs sending you to the second floor. Any eligible elector of Story County may cast a ballot during regular office hours from Monday to Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. You can check out sample ballots on the hallway outside the auditor's office. This is the first combined city school election since House File 566 was passed during the 2017 Iowa General Assembly session. So in the past, school board elections have always occurred in September, city elections in November. Now they're one at the same. So the ballot does indicate both elections. Voters will vote at the same polling place assigned for the presidential and gubernatorial elections. All ballots will include races for school districts in the area school, and ballots of incorporated residents will also have city races. So if you live out in the county, in the unincorporated area, you won't be electing a city official. You'll just be voting for school board members. And some jurisdictions do have some public measures as well that will be on the ballot. Again, some dates to remember for the auditor's office. That in-person voting began this past Monday. Satellite voting will be available at the Iowa State Memorial Union on Friday, the 18th of October. And then voter pre-registration deadline is on Friday, the 25th. And that is also the last day to request a mailed absentee ballot. Polls open 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. on Tuesday, November 5th, which is Election Day, and I will not be here until the following week, so I want to make sure to share that.
Okay.
And then, if you want more information, there is a city election page on the county's website. Again, that's at www.storycountyiowa.gov. How do you want to reach us, or how can you reach us and sign up for Notify Me? Go to social media and don't miss out on our happenings. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And check our videos on YouTube of the weekly Board of Supervisors meetings, or contact me at lharder@storycountyiowa.gov.
Leanne, I'm sure Paul's paid his property taxes. He's quite punctual.
Yes.
I have no doubt. I reminded him last month.
Well, I postmarked it the last day of September. But, you know, it's just great to have Leanne on because, number one, she updates us
Absolutely.
On all the necessary things, licenses and deadlines and all this sort of thing. But also, there's always fun things and things that are available through the county that really enhance life here. So those are pleasant things. And sometimes I've said that she brings me to tears with
There you go.
Some of
well,
those
the property tax reminder.
Yeah, that was tears, a tearful situation.
Leanne, I would just thank you for joining us, and I want you to make sure to stay warm this weekend because it may get chilly, okay?
I will.
Well, thanks, Leanne Harder.
Thank you,
Always
Leanne.
A pleasure to have
thank
you.
Thank you both. Have a great week.
You bet. Now, don't touch that dial. No, don't touch it, because after this brief time out, our next guest will tell us about a really special race that's coming up this Sunday right here in Ames.
Today here on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Paul Wearson.
And I'm Dennis Hart. It is 13 minutes after the hour on this Wednesday, and joining us now is Don Muff, one of the organizers of an important race that is coming up this Sunday at the Ames Middle School. Welcome to Local Talk, Don. Tell us about the race.
Well, this event is going to be held on Sunday, October 13th, this coming Sunday, beginning at 9 a.m. at the Ames Middle School.
So that was called Run for the Roses. How did that term originate, Don?
The flower for the Alpha Omicron Pi sorority is the rose.
Oh,
so
really?
Folks that are residents of Ames, that are members of the Ames Area Running Club, and this sorority at Iowa State University. My wife has been chapter advisor there for years to make this event possible.
So the sorority really is the spark plug that gets this going?
Well, they are the spark plug in that they help us a lot with the publicity and getting sponsors and generating enthusiasm amongst the members of the Iowa State University students. We get a lot of students that enter.
Now, this is for a good cause. Talk about where proceeds from this race go.
Yeah, all of our proceeds go to arthritis research grants, which is distributed by the Alpha Omicron Sorority National Office to fund arthritis research. So there's really not a lot of administrative expenses that go into this. The funds go directly to arthritis research. And over the past 33 years, we've been able to donate a total of $305,000.
And I got to say that Don is a great ad for this because he's in our age group, Dennis, but he has 0% body fat.
That's right.
It looks like he's had a career of running. He looks just as healthy as sunshine.
Disgustingly healthy, Don. No, we're just kidding. You look great.
Hey, flatter to get you guys everywhere.
Well, now the schedule, this is on this coming Sunday the 13th. 7:30 is race day registration and packet pickup. At 9 o'clock, the 5K race walk is held. At 9:30, breakfast begins and the kids' fun run. Then at 10 a.m. is the 10K race. What kind of breakdown is there between numbers for the 5K and the 10K?
The largest majority of entrants do the shorter
the 5K
event.
You don't have a half K, do you, for us, for Paul and me?
Well,
you have a 100-yard race,
100-yard walk.
Yeah, that's. Well, but you see, 10 miles, that's quite a. Now, where is the. You begin, of course, at the middle school out on Mortison Road, and then I take it you run up to the campus, or.
Yes, it begins on Dotson Drive and winds on into Mortison Road, and then all the way to Hayward, across State Street to Hayward, and then through that part of the campus, eventually winds its way back to Sheldon and Arbor Street to State Street. State Street will be completely shut off barriers during the race time, and we have signs out there that the City of Ames has been great to put up to warn potential drivers, residents of that area.
Well, you're going to get to contend with idiots like me who drive through barriers. Now, Don, what kind of numbers do we talk about usually in terms of participation in this race?
Right now, we're at just around 700 people have pre-registered, and we're hoping to top out at 1,000.
Yeah. So registration goes right up until the race, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah. A lot of folks seem to wait until the last minute to register. That's fine.
Now, you have a lot of age divisions that we notice here. Talk about who can race in this race.
Anybody that's able.
All ages.
All ages, all the way up to 90 plus.
Wow.
In five-year divisions. We have some custom-made medals that we award the first, second, and third person to finish in their age division. The amenities of this race compared to the fees, this is a fee race, of course, are just great. I mean, every finisher gets a long-sleeved T-shirt.
And that design changes every year.
The design
changes.
So
if you went every year, you'd have all these T-shirts and memories. That's kind of cool. I like that. Now, we have kids, too, right, Don?
Oh, yes. Yes, we have a kids' fun run, which is held over at the middle school track. It varies by the age of a kid, anywhere from a 25-yard dash for real tiny children to, one loop around the track for kids that are, five to seven.
And you get a lot of kids, do you?
Yes, we do.
Now, when you talk about all those separate events at the middle school, and then you look at the whole course, what kind of numbers are we talking about when you talk about staffing this thing?
There are a lot of volunteers involved, a lot of work involved. One thing we've got going for us is that the Alpha Omicron sorority has better than 100 members. So all of those folks, of course, this is their big philanthropy. They volunteer. Many of them help out at the omelet breakfast, which is served at the middle school after the race. And boy, that's just something in and of itself that is just very enjoyable for people.
So the breakfast is indoors?
It's indoors.
Where you're comfortable, whether it's hot or cold outdoors, you're comfortable having breakfast?
Yes.
What's for breakfast? Omelets?
Yeah, breakfast.
Paul's always hungry.
Yeah, right.
Breakfast is omelets and all the fixings that go with it.
Don, you have been doing this race for 33 years, and I hope you're going to do it for another 33. How has it changed over the years? Has the participation increased year by year?
Oh, yes, participation. I remember the first year that we had it. We used to hold it over at the old Iowa State baseball field track area, and I think our first year we had between 75 to 100 entrants.
Now we're up to 1,000, hopefully. Reminding everybody, this goes for arthritis research.
That's right.
And so it's been doing that for all these 33 years, and I'm taking it that those research grants have been used by a variety of people who are attacking this arthritis problem.
Yes, yes. I mean, arthritis doesn't affect just people in our age group. Juvenile arthritis is a very big problem. Yeah. So it goes to, roughly all ages, because just about all ages.
Well, I really, when you're my age, you remember the polio epidemic and all the pools closing and all the things that happened that threw a genuine fear into the population. And March of Dimes was founded by Roosevelt. It's the only time in my memory where the cause or the disease or illness they were trying to raise money to solve was solved. Mm-hmm. March of Dimes didn't have a charity anymore because of the Salk vaccine. And so yep. now March of Dimes mm-hmm. supports birth defects, mm-hmm. research yeah, about that. Yeah. So a lot of these diseases or illnesses or afflictions, though, like arthritis, mm-hmm. are very difficult to conquer, like muscular dystrophy and others you could name.
Yes.
And so there needs to be a cash flow every year, and that's why it's important that this is an annual event, Don.
Yes.
Well, Don, we have to go, but we're going to remind everybody right now, it is Sunday, this Sunday, October 13th, 7:30 to 9:30 is registration at Ames Middle School. Yep. There's room for everybody. There's room to register. Come on out.
Come on out. Please come on out. And like I said earlier, the amenities are great. And if you're in the event, every finisher gets a red rose.
Okay.
Furnished by Greenhouse over in Boone.
Every finisher gets a red rose.
It's a red rose.
Thank you, Don, for being here, and best of luck to you this Sunday during the race.
Okay, well, thank you very much for having me as a guest.
You bet.
Thank you for coming, Don.
Don Muff. Now, don't go away. After this short break, the new president of the Iowa State University Research Park, Rick Sanders, is going to take the guest seat, and you won't want to miss what he has to say. Welcome back to more of Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio. 25 after the hour, I'm Dennis Hart. One quick thing, Don Muff of the Run for the Roses race wanted us to say that Wendy Winterstein, the president of Iowa State University, is going to be the official starter of that race on Sunday morning at Ames Middle School. That's nice.
What an event, and it's so nice that she lends credibility to that since the sorority is such a sponsor.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Well, I'm Paul Wearson here, and joining us now in the new, well, he's the new man in charge of the Iowa State University Research Park, Rick Sanders, who is also a former member of the Story County Board of Supervisors. Welcome, Rick.
Oh, so glad to be here. Thank you guys for having me.
Well, you've had an interesting background. The board. How many years were you on the board of supervisors?
Nine.
9 years.
Had nine wonderful years in Story County. Got to work with so many great people, and hopefully we had a really good impact. I mean, a lot of great things happened throughout our entire community during that time. But what a great experience to have an opportunity to really see what public service is all about through the eyes of those who have spent their lifetime serving the public.
So I take it that this was too good a job, the presidency of the Research Park, to pass up. You're a member of the Board of Supervisors, could have stayed there a long time, and you pulled out to do this one.
Yeah, this is not a whole lot different than what I was doing as a member of the Board of Supervisors. It's just a really focused segment of what I was doing at the Board of Supervisors. I found out pretty early when I joined the board in 2010 that I was most interested in all things revolving around community and economic development. And so when the opportunity presented itself to come to the research park, which is one of the primary drivers of our community and economic development, it was right in my wheelhouse, and I'm so honored that President Winterstein decided to give me a chance to run the research park.
Now, you came in May of 2019 this year, So you've had to hit the road running, right, Rick?
Yeah, I've got 5 months in, so, you know, I like to say you can ask me anything, and I'll be glad to answer it, and then we'll go find the right answer for you after I leave.
Well, for starters, Paul and I were talking before the broadcast. Not a lot of that we hear about the research park. Mm-hmm. A lot of Ames residents, including us, probably don't know exactly what's out there. So, Rick, exactly what's out there?
Yeah, so one of the great secrets in the Midwest and frankly in the nation. So last week I had a few days of meetings back in North Carolina at something called the Research Triangle Park, which is the granddaddy of research parks. The example that I'll give is we're about 400 acres here at the Iowa State University Research Park, and back in North Carolina they're 7,000 acres. They've been established since 1959. We were established in 1987. But so it's 400 acres of property as we sit today, almost a million square feet of built space. In that million square feet, we have at any given time about 100 tenants and somewhere in the neighborhood of 2,200 to 2,300 employees working through the research park. It's grown enormously over the last 6 years, and we're projecting to double over the next 8 or 10 years. And that's what we're working toward. And our sole purpose of existence is to help Iowa State University fulfill its mission of helping to create, share, and apply knowledge that improves Iowa and the world. And we try to do that by making sure that we're connecting industry to Iowa State University. And there's really three connection points. There's the talent base, right? Being able to draw students, and I hope we can talk about that, while they're students, and then as they finish up their career at Iowa State University, being able to use the specialized resources that Iowa State University owns and has access to. When you think about things like the Ames Lab, which is the only Department of Defense laboratory and Department of Energy laboratory located on a college campus, and then the USDA labs out just northeast of town, we've got some really specialized equipment that industry doesn't want to go put that kind of capital into to only use occasionally, but they can come here and access it. And then finally, world-class research. Iowa State University, especially when you get into all areas, ag and biorenewable and high-tech kind of issues, there's nowhere better than Iowa State University to conduct that resource. And what we found through the years is making the connection between industry and the university, two entities that move at different paces, that have different structures, that generally speak different languages, there needs to be some kind of help connecting those two, and that is one of the roles that the research park fills.
Well, it's very important, and one thing that people don't realize is the role of universities, especially land-grant universities, in research and development of things that are very difficult to do in the private sector. You know, to raise money to finance an idea is very difficult in the private sector, but in a university campus, through grants and other funding, you have the ability to do research and fund it that you probably don't have otherwise outside a university situation, you know?
Yeah, I think that's 100% true. The other thing I would say is we tend, you know, Iowa Nice is a real thing, right? And mean it with a really positive connotation 99% of the time, but the 1% of the time that Iowa Nice does not serve us like we need it to serve us is we're pretty shy about talking about the great stuff that we do. And so the reality is Iowa State University has truly been changing the world for the last 150 years, and there's example after example. I mean, if you go back, you look at George Washington Carver and think about what was happening then in our entire nation for a gentleman like George Washington Carver to come here and then have the impact worldwide that he had. But he's just one example of time after time after time that Iowa State University people and resources and research has truly changed the world, but we don't ever talk about it. We've got to do a better job talking about that impact, and then we've got to increase that impact.
Let's talk about some of the businesses specifically that are in that park. Now, John Deere just opened up a new technology center there, a remarkable thing, 33,000 square foot facility, I understand, to test some of their sprayers during the winter. Now, what else specifically? What businesses are there that we don't know about that would just wow us if we did know about?
Yeah, so, I mean, there, like I say, at any given time, there's about 100, and that's all levels. You mentioned John Deere, but it's all the way down to a single person working in a lab trying to develop new ways for crops to grow, right? It is indoor gardening. Where we can use less water and less resources and have less food miles put on the food before it reaches the consumer.
Well, it says here 90 companies,
yep.
More than 2,000 employees,
yep.
More than 800,000 square feet of developed building space, probably larger than that. It's just a very big enterprise. And looking back in history, you know, Iowa State, the metallurgy people at Iowa State were involved in the Manhattan Project to develop the atomic bomb.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are things that people, as you say, may not be aware of. And in the same vein, here you have all kinds of developmental things that are happening. And when you say one person doing some research, that really gives me a flavor of entrepreneurship.
Well, it's entrepreneurship and innovation, and our role is to try to help provide the resources through Iowa State University and, frankly, outside of Iowa State University, working with the state of Iowa and working with local governments and finding ways to connect industry to industry in places that there aren't natural connections, with the whole goal of being, when somebody is innovative, when they have an idea, when they're entrepreneurial, that we can grow it right here. So traditionally, Iowa has been a commodity-producing state, right? We grow it, we raise it, and then we send it out, and we receive whatever value, if any, there is in that commodity. And it's a pretty limited value proposition. And what we found over the last, I don't know, couple decades is that we need to do a better job adding value here. Ethanol is a good first step of that, but it's just the first step. Figuring out ways to take these commodities that we're producing, figure out how to produce them in a more efficient manner, and then figuring out what we can do with them to add value to them before they leave us here. And that is what the research park is absolutely focused in on. And that's where you go through company by company that we have in the park. And it's large companies, John Deere, Vermeer, Kent, Beringer Ingelheim, Merck, worldwide companies. And it's small startups. We've got a new small startup out of Silicon Valley that I am so excited about called Pivot Bio. And Pivot Bio, like I say, they're headquartered in Silicon Valley, but they developed a microbe whose byproduct is nitrogen that lives in the soil. Can you imagine if we can have, in essence, the soil produce its own nitrogen and we don't have to add those kind of components in order to grow crop, the kind of impact that things like that can have? And that's just one example of the kind of things that are going on out at the research park at any given time. And what we've got to do a great job of now going forward is recognizing that if you can create the right ecosystem with the right gravitational pull, you can pull different entities together that don't appear to fit together, but they create unexpected synergies when they come together and develop something that they never would have seen coming before. That's our role as we push forward and try to grow the research.
Now, Rick, when a company comes to you, and I presume you go to companies as well and make a pitch, is that right? What do you tell them? You say, our job is to provide the resources for them to be successful. Specifically, what resources does the research park provide any company coming in?
Yeah, first thing I would say in today's employment environment, right? As of a month ago, we were the lowest unemployment rate in America.
Right.
So the first thing I would say is access to unbelievable talent. The talent that Iowa State University is producing in those 8,000 graduates every year. And so I'll give you an example. We mentioned John Deere earlier. So John Deere, at any given time in the research park, and they have three locations. They have the building that they just built that you mentioned, but they also have two other locations within the park, one working on cybersecurity and the other working on other issues within John Deere. But they have, at any given time, 50 students working for them in paid internship positions. And I like the way John Deere views these workers. They refer to them as full-time employees who happen to be working part-time hours. So the last 15 of those 50 that graduated from Iowa State University, John Deere offered all 15 of them full-time positions within the company, and 14 of the 15 now work for John Deere full-time. imagine that stickiness. Imagine that impact. So a company is contacting and connecting with these students early, clearly finding students that they value, and the students are finding great value in the company. Think about how far down the road that puts you. That's just one example, and that, frankly, is an anomaly, right? Those are not the numbers that we see across the board, but that's a huge impact. Second one I would point to is Kent Corporation, as they located here. They located here for exactly the reason I just told you. They wanted more direct access to future workforce. Mm-hmm. And what they found when they got here is, and Kent is somebody who has been really connected to Iowa State University through the years and been a great supporter of Iowa State University through the years. But just by having a vice president located here in Ames on a day-to-day basis, on campus every day, going to coffee with different researchers and seeing the new ideas that are springing up in the research park, Kent has found unbelievable value when they look to tomorrow. What's the research of tomorrow? What's the next big idea, maybe for acquisition, for tomorrow? Those are the kind of things that we're starting to see, and that's exactly what I tell companies when we go to visit with them about the reasons they should locate in the research park and have some kind of presence down here, is that immediate connectivity that they can have back and forth with Iowa State University.
Well, in the broad brush, big picture, we're aware of several things that are changing in our society that are really threatening and unsettling. And one of those is the disappearance of a lot of jobs due to computerization and automation. That means that the workforce is going to look differently in 10 years, and different jobs are going to have to be developed. And that comes from the kind of research and activity that's going on at the research park. You know, if there are going to be new things, doing things in a different way, that means we need a population to be retrained for new things that are happening in a different way. And this is founded in a place like the research park.
It is. I mean, the jobs on both ends of that, right? The artificial intelligence and automation of routine task come out. Actually, I would flip what you just said and said the reality is with a shrinking workforce, which is what we're seeing, we've got to figure out how, especially our smaller manufacturers, how our smaller manufacturers can continue to exist in some of the smaller towns all around Iowa without true access to workforce. And so part of that, Alliant Energy just partnered with Cirrus at Iowa State University to build a new automated lab where small and medium-sized manufacturers can come and test out processes and see what of their process they can get more efficient in by using machines because they have such problem attracting workforce. Second part of what you said is exactly right. We've got to make sure that we have a workforce that is ready for the jobs of tomorrow, and they're much more technical. They're much more specialized. Some require a college degree and some don't. We've got to do a better job of identifying those individuals who, for whatever reason, or don't want to or don't belong getting a four-year degree, but they've got to be a key part of this workforce. And it's not the old working on the line kind of job where you're sorting bolts as they come by. We can handle all that. We've got to have a much more specialized, much more interested and interesting kind of workforce, and we've got to be creative in how we help develop that.
Rick, this is an amazing story you've got. You've got 400 acres out there. How much room is left for expansion? How much bigger can the park get in terms of businesses coming in?
Yeah, so we've got 400 acres today, but that's not going to be the end. And right today, what's going through the city of Ames, we're going to have about another 120 that will be developable over the next few years. But this conversation that I'm involved in with Athletic Director Jamie Pollard will have an impact on what the park looks like going forward. I've had a conversation with Governor Reynolds and Debbie Durham. And so the Iowa State University Research Park happens to geographically be located right here in Ames in close proximity to Iowa State University and maybe eventually truly connected to Iowa State University geographically. But that's where we are. That's not who we are. And we truly have to have an impact from river to river, border to border in the state of Iowa if we're going to fulfill our mission of helping Iowa State fulfill its mission. And in order to do that, I think it's a mistake for anybody to think that the research park is going to be confined to a certain area or certain land size. This is what we have today. I would expect if you draw the timeline out, you're going to see the research park with a lot more acreage than you have now and in multiple locations.
You mean as far as river to river, maybe a location on the Mississippi, one on the Missouri? That's what you're talking about?
Yeah, if we're truly going to have impact everywhere in the state, we've got to form closer relationships and connections all over the state. Clearly, Iowa State University is why we exist, and it's going to be our hub. I mean, that's going to be true forever. But just because something's its hub, I think of Iowa State University Extension and what kind of partnership we might be able to have with Extension. But you talk about river to river and border to border. Mm-hmm. There's Iowa State University truly impacting it. Now let's look at how we can bring some of the things that the research park does so well to have those kind of impacts throughout the state. It's a big vision, but a big vision is necessary at this point in world history.
Well, I'm kind of a history buff. So the origin of this whole idea of a research park, you said that North Carolina was one of the first and most large and established facilities. How did this idea come about, the idea of a research park, a concentrated area where all these things can be done? What's the history of that?
So I actually believe it was 1951. So North Carolina was 1959, and it started via a relationship with IBM. IBM moving their headquarters there, and Raleigh and Durham and Chapel Hill, three great institutions, all recognized that they had an unbelievable opportunity. And so they carved some things out. But where it really all started, and it shouldn't surprise anybody, but it started at Stanford. And that is one of the reasons, maybe the primary reason, that Silicon Valley is Silicon Valley. Right. But that was 1951. And there was a recognition that universities were great within the university setting. But there was a gap between university and rolling things out to the public in commercializing things. And so they tried to set up a mechanism where things could pretty seamlessly. The joke is, the reason that it worked there is Stanford was smart enough to set up a way for people to break their NDAs over coffee every morning. And that is why it was able to ramp up the way it did. But Silicon Valley, to me, is the great example. When you go back to 1951, before Stanford put that flag in the ground, and before the old song, Do You Know the Way to San Jose? Mm-hmm. It was hard to get to San Jose. Now it's the middle of everything that we do tech-related. There is another opportunity facing us in the world today, really, really in three areas. When we get 10 years down the road, so 10 years from now, you guys are going to invite me back. We're going to come and we're going to have the same conversation. And when we have that conversation 10 years from now, somewhere in the world is going to be the epicenter, the Silicon Valley of all things ag tech. Mm-hmm. Somewhere in the world is going to be the epicenter of all things biorenewable, right? And I'm not talking about ethanol. I'm talking about the fifth generation of value added in biorenewables as we try to move away from this fossil fuel-based economy. And think about it. I mean, you look at how many things on this desk in front of us have petroleum products in it, right? Mm-hmm. We've got to figure out how to get past that. Somewhere is going to be the leader on that. And somewhere is absolutely going to be the leader in how we maintain a growing need for protein around the world. So that's livestock, right? There are very few places that have an opportunity to be all three. Mm-hmm. We're one of them. And I say pretty regularly, we're in a tie for first place right now. But we're in a tie for first place only because, you know, Wendy Winterstein says go at the middle school on the Run for the Roses. There's going to be a whole bunch of people tied for first place there for the first four or five steps, right? And then it's going to start to sort itself out. Well, we're in the first four or five steps right now, and if we're serious about potentially being one of those places. If we're serious about having a generational impact for all of Iowa and, frankly, the Midwest, then we've got to figure out how to come together, university entities, state and local government entities, and industry, and all pull in the same direction.
Rick, you are an enthusiastic advocate, obviously, here. We've got about a minute left. Your role as president, besides being an enthusiastic advocate, what else do you do? What's your responsibility as the president of this gigantic enterprise?
Yeah, so the Research Park is a separate 501c3 not-for-profit, right? And so we've got our own board of directors, and the board of directors has charged me with the business activities of the Research Park. So Research Park in and of itself is a $12 million entity every year, and I am fully responsible for the day-to-day operation, all visioning, trying to set the direction, and really work with oversight from our board of directors and Dean David Spaulding and President Wendy Winterstein, and try to make sure we're all moving in a direction that's beneficial to Iowa State University, which means it has to be beneficial to the state of Iowa and the world at large.
Well, when you talk about leadership and who emerges as the mecca, it sounds to me like the Research Park here has a great deal of momentum toward that, Rick.
We have great momentum right now. We've got to maintain this momentum, and we've got to make sure that there's so much of this that's outside of our control or, frankly, anyone's control. We've got to control the items we can. Mm-hmm. We've got to go through our process and make sure we're making our case and make sure we let people know how special this place is in order to have a chance.
And thanks, Rick.
Rick, we have to go, but we're going to invite you back way before 10 years.
All right, perfect. I'd love to come back. Thank you, guys.
It has to be before 10 years because of my age.
Thank you so very much. Rick Sanders, president of the Iowa State University Research Park. Coming up next, after this brief timeout, we're going to talk about Little Orphan Annie and why she's about to take center stage, at least in Webster City.
Back with Local Talk Wednesday, and we're joined on the phone now by Lawine Getter, who has some exciting news about something going on this weekend in Webster City involving a little red-headed orphan named Annie.
Annie.
Hey, how are you, Lawine?
Well, I'm very excited. We open tomorrow night, and we've had some really good rehearsals this week so far, and looking forward to bringing this musical to our audience.
Well, talk about who your performers are and where they're going to be performing.
Okay. Webster City Community Theater is located, obviously, in Webster City. We are on Wilson Avenue, and I have brought together a cast of 27 young people. Because it's Annie Jr., everyone in the cast has to be 18 years of age or under. And so we start with one second grader, and we have two high schoolers, and everybody else is in middle school. And so it's a group of really talented and eager young people who have spent a lot of time the last 5 weeks working on the songs and the lines and the blocking for everybody's favorite musical about, like you say, a redheaded orphan.
So this is like children's theater.
Yes, it is.
So you're talking about a strong lead here. The person who plays Annie carries the show. Must have a great little girl up there who's going to do that, right?
We do. Emerson Pockert has really come through as the character. And when we had our dress rehearsal Monday night, and she came out in the final couple scenes in her red dress and her red curly wig, she just was Annie. And it was very exciting to see that.
Now, Paul, everybody knows Annie has a dog named Sandy. Is there going to be a real dog on stage or a performer playing the part of Sandy?
Well, the script actually calls for someone to play Sandy. And our musical director, Dane Barner, had a second grade son who was very upset that he wasn't old enough to be in the show as a fourth grader. And so he pleaded if he could please play Sandy. And he just is the cutest little Sandy. We had a costume made for him, and he was delighted with the costume. I just love my costume. I'm so soft. he gave me a little bit of consternation because in the song Tomorrow, he actually responds to Annie by saying, whoa, 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 and he was a little hesitant about wanting to do that. But I said, if you want a red bow around your neck at the end of the play, then you have to do it. And so he's been very cooperative.
No, that's great because that boy just wanted to be on stage, and it's very creative.
I just want to be Sandy.
Well, what about Daddy Warbucks? If all of your performers are young people, and Daddy Warbucks is not necessarily young, mid-40s, maybe 50s in the comic strip, who's playing Daddy Warbucks?
A young man named Hank Christensen, who has done several shows with us now. And he did say he would shave his head, and I said, no, Hank, don't do that.
Daddy Warbucks is bald, yes.
Yeah, and so I said, well, just gray your temples. And he was satisfied with that.
Now, is he a teenager in school there?
Yes, he's in middle school.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, tell us about performance times and all this.
Okay. We opened tomorrow night on October 10th, and then we have evening shows the 10th, the 11th, the 12th, and the 13th. And we also have matinees on Saturday and Sunday this weekend.
That's a lot.
Let's start at 2.
That's, in Broadway, you do 8 shows a week, I think. And so,
well, we're doing 6 shows in 4 days.
Well, that's big time on Broadway, about the same union situation. I hope you're not paying.
I know, and I've always wondered how they do it.
No, it sounds great, and I love that. The sun will come out tomorrow. I should get
carried away. Wait a minute, that's too early.
You just auditioned for our next show.
Well, I could play the part of Sandy. Oh, yeah.
You're a
tomorrow thing.
Yes, I'll tell you
what. Hey, Louie, best of luck to you. We have to rush, but best of luck this weekend with Annie.
Thank you very much.
Louie Getter up at the Webster City Community Theater. God, that's great. That was one of my favorite comic strips of all time, Paul.
It was lovely, and it's a great show, and it's hard to beat that song, The Sun Will Come Out Tomorrow.
We've had a great show today. Gosh, so many guests on. You've been listening to Local Talk Wednesday. I'm Dennis Hart.
And I'm Paul Wearson. Local Talk also airs today at noon and 7 p.m. here on KJOI at 89.1 FM. And you can hear a recording of this show later today online at khoifm.org, as well as find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. Also, remember that KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org.
The sun will come out. Oh, no, that's not our theme song. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. You can hear it underneath me right now. Local Talk's a radio production workshop, as well as a show. So if you'd like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. So come on down and join the Local Talk team.
And remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and
we'll see you again on the radio. The sun will come out.